Here's Pastor Brian as he continues his study on Romans 6.
Welcome to the program today, and this is a continuation of a verse-by-verse study through Romans chapter 6 on the subject of sanctification, which actually we started last week. And currently we find ourselves at verse 15, which is a natural break in the chapter where Paul asks another question. What then, shall we sin because we are not under law but under grace? And the answer is certainly not, or may God forbid. And so Paul is addressing the issue of the fact that we are under the grace of God. Does that mean that we could live any old way that we choose, any sort of lifestyle that we want, just because we are not under law? Does that give us a license to sin? And his answer is, God forbid. What we need to understand is that God has started us in grace, and we need to continue in grace. And same in there is sanctification. We're not saved by grace, and then after that, we place ourselves under a law to obey, to live up to some sort of standard so that we can continue to have an acceptance before God. We start in grace, and we must continue in grace. But that grace will not lead us to sin, is Paul's statement. That's what the critics of grace want to accuse people of that teach about the grace of God. Oh, you're teaching people, they just need to receive the Lord, and it doesn't matter how they live. That is so foreign to the teaching of grace. Grace is what liberates. Grace is what frees us from the power of sin and which gives us the ability to live a life of holiness and a life that's pleasing to the Lord. So grace is actually the greater message. The law only brings people under bondage, only shows people where they have failed, and only brings people under God's judgment. Because the law says, do this and live, or God's curse will be upon you. But when we're under grace, God transformed the life inwardly. So grace is the greater power that God's given us to live a life that's pleasing to Him. So when we teach that someone is under the grace of God, needs to continue in the grace of God, we're not saying it doesn't matter how you live. God forbid, as Paul would say. There are three references in the scripture that show that grace is superior to law. First of all, grace itself teaches people to live a godly life. Titus 2:11 says, "For the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in the present age." So once a person comes under the grace of God, it automatically teaches them that they need to live a holy life. Because when the grace of God comes in, it brings freedom as well as release from the power of sin, then it automatically communicates or teaches the person that they should live a godly life. Then secondly, grace is a greater motivator. Because in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14, says, "For the love of Christ constrains us, because we judge thus, that if one died for all, then all died." And so because Christ died in our place and we died with Him, now Paul says it's the love of Christ that constrained him or compelled him to live a life that was pleasing to the Lord. And thirdly, grace is the one that brings the power. And that's what we saw in Romans 6, 1 through 14, which says that we died with Christ so that sin no longer has dominion over us. It is no longer our master. Our old man was crucified with Christ. And not only did we die with Him, we rose with Him to walk in newness of life. So when a person experiences the grace of God, it's impossible for them to then just go off and live a life completely ungodly just because they're under grace, because grace transforms the person through the power of Jesus Christ. And now when it relates to law, just because we're not under law, does that mean we just go and live a life of unholiness? Paul says certainly not, or God forbid. It's the strongest possible way in the Greek to communicate the idea of absolutely not. And so here we are now under grace and not under law. Griffith Thomas, who wrote an excellent commentary in the book of Romans, says that to be under law means three things. Number one, a divine commandment ordering perfect obedience. Number two, a divine promise of reward for perfect obedience. And number three, a divine threatening of punishment for falling short of that perfect obedience. So you should thank God that you're not under law, because it demanded perfect obedience. And with perfect obedience came blessing, and with imperfect obedience came God's judgment or God's curse. But the Bible teaches us that Jesus Christ became a curse for us. He died under the penalty of the law. He paid that price for us. So the law does no longer have dominion over us. We're not under its power, but we are under grace. And once again, Griffith Thomas says, to be under grace is a divine bestowment of inward power to obey. See, all the law could do is say, here's God's standard, obey it. Grace comes in and gives us that inward power and transforms us, gives us a brand new nature that's like the Lord's, and then gives us that power to walk in that newness of life. So we need to start in grace and we continue in grace. And if you want to understand the idea of sanctification, it is not now all of a sudden put the law upon people and that'll bring about the transformation. See, the bottom line is law has no power to change the heart. All it could do is point to God's standard. Grace comes in and changes the heart, as well as power to live a life that's pleasing to the Lord. So here we're told that we are not under law, but under grace. And actually, when you realize that you're under grace, it will actually produce a life of holiness, not a life of freedom to sin. That's what Paul goes on to say, because we're under grace, now we have a choice to make. Verse 16, do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin to death or of obedience to righteousness? And so now, even though we're under grace, we now have a power and ability to make a choice. And that choice is obviously that we need to be slaves of obedience, slaves of righteousness. And that's a contrast that Paul's now going to set up in verses 15 through 23, that we were once slaves to sin, but now we are slaves to righteousness. That slavery to sin has been broken. We saw that in Romans 6, 1 through 14. And now we are slaves of righteousness. But at the same time, there's a choice that we need to make. And Paul's saying, you do realize this. You understand that whoever you yield to, that's who you are going to become a slave to. Now, this is where we need to be warned extremely. Although the Bible does say sin no longer has power over you, if we make the wrong choices, if we decide to submit ourselves to sin and its desires, it will want to come back and enslave us under its power. That's why we're told here in verse 16 to understand this, that if you yield to sin, it'll want to come in and take more and more authority over your life. And that is the nature of sin. See, we try and rationalize, well, I'll just do this one more time. It won't affect me. God will forgive me and I'll move on. Well, Jesus said, whoever sins is a slave to sin. And that's what sin now wants to do, is come back and be its Lord over your life. The Bible clearly teaches that that power has been broken and we don't have to make that choice. We're no longer enslaved to it. But then he also warns us that if you continue to submit yourself to sin, it'll want to come in and enslave you and cause you to be submitted to it. Weiss defines the word slave here, which is the Greek word doulos, as meaning one whose will is swallowed up in another. And that's what we now need to choose to do, is have our will swallowed up in the things of God rather than in the things of sin. And we're warned here, if we yield ourselves to sin, it's going to want to produce a slavery to that sin. And that's so often the way it happens. One man put it this way, sow a thought and reap an act. Sow an act and reap a habit. Sow a habit and reap a destiny. And that's the enslaving nature of sin that the believer can find himself under if he doesn't acquire all the resources that God's given to him in this battle. And for many, they think, well, if I commit this one act of sin, it won't affect me. And that is a lie from the pit. If you commit an act of sin, the next time that temptation comes around, it seems like we're that much more weak to resist that. That's why every little act of sin needs to be fought. And I put in my Bible and over Romans chapter 6, resist beginnings, meaning don't even yield one little part over to sin, because then it becomes easier the next time after that, until the point where we could actually become back enslaved to the very thing that God freed us from. And so we're being warned here. Godet, who wrote a commentary in the book of Romans, has an excellent warning in relation to not yielding to sin in the least. And basically, he's warning people to think, well, if I commit this act of sin, it won't affect me that much. He writes this, after the doing of each act, as if he can return to the state in which he was before, exactly as if nothing had passed. But a more serious study of human life proves, on the contrary, that every act of will, whether in direction of good or of evil, as it passes into reality, creates or strengthens a tendency which drags man with increasing force till it becomes altogether irresistible. Every free act, then, to a certain degree, determines the future. With every act, the person falls under more and more of its sway. And so either we are going to choose to yield our bodies, our lives, as slaves to righteousness, and we'll follow in that pattern, or as we yield to sin, we'll follow in that pattern. So we're all on a road, and it depends on the choices that we're making. We are all on a path, either as being enslaved to righteousness or being enslaved to sin. That's determined by the choices that we are making. I want to make it absolutely clear that Romans 6 is telling us that sin and its power, its enslaving power, has been broken over our life. And so now we have the freedom for the first time to yield our lives as servants of righteousness to God. And that's the path that we need to continue on. And what begins to happen is every time we yield to righteousness, we get a taste of that. We find the joy of it. We experience the blessing of obedience, and we want more and more of that in our life. And that's the direction that we should go in. The Bible says that those that are poor in spirit, or those that are hunger and thirst for righteousness, shall be filled. As we're hungering for more of that work in our life, as we taste it, as we experience it, we'll want more. But the warning is also true that if we go the other way and yield our bodies as instruments for sin, we'll want more and more of that, and it'll want to enslave our lives. And so we're warned here. Don't think that these little decisions, these little choices, these little compromises have no effect upon us. They do. May we all be in that process, presenting ourselves as servants of righteousness to God for His purposes. May we be those whose will is swallowed up in another. May we simply desire to please the Lord and be a servant to Him for obedience resulting in righteousness. God help us in all this process.